Horrific Network Entertainment.
Welcome to the flagship show of the Horrific Network, featuring interviews with icons of the entertainment industry. This is the Horrific Podcast.
Welcome in to the Horrific Podcast. As always, I am your host, Jimmy, and this is our show, which features all kinds of fun content, but most importantly, it features the celebrity interviews that we enjoy doing so much. I hope that for you guys, you enjoy what we do. And I hope that you guys have fun listening to everything on our channel. This week, we have a big week up ahead. A new series is going to start on the Screening Room as part of the Screening Room supplemental type thing, where I talk WrestleMania, reviewing as many WrestleManias as I can before leaving to go to WrestleMania 40. I'm pretty confident I'm going to be able to get through all of them, but I don't have any promises per se, but I do think I'll be able to get through all of them. And this week, those series, they're not going to be the longest podcasts ever, but they should be fun as little mini supplemental podcasts go. Probably like 20 minutes a piece, spending like 10 to 15 minutes on each WrestleMania. And I think, like I said, you know, watching them, I'm almost through WrestleMania 6 right now, and it's been fun to kind of rewatch them all and see what's going on. In the world of indie horror, or in horror in general, we have Campfire Chronicles coming back. In just a couple weeks, we will be starting season 9 of that show with Imaginary, the Blumhouse movie, their merger with Atomic Monster, the James Wan, Jason Blum love fest that they put out a couple weeks ago about how they're so excited to be working together. The first movie wasn't very good with that merger. That was Night Swim. That's all I'm going to say about it. Like, it wasn't very good. It was a movie in which lacked a lot of direction, and it was just a mess. You can go back and listen to that podcast on our channel if you want, like, our full in detail. But Imaginary looks good. And Imaginary looks like something that could be possibly part of an HHN type situation. And, you know, they always enjoy bringing Blumhouse to HHN. They did it last year with The Exorcist Believer, which, at least in Orlando, was kind of the dark horse maze of the year. It was actually very scary for not having a real idea of what was going to end up happening in that movie until after HHN was in full swing. I thought they did a pretty good job. People didn't, because David Gordon Green left the project to go direct something else, the sequel, and the franchise has been shelved, which I thought was interesting. But, you know, here we are. The other thing to keep in mind is Legendary's kind of breathing down their neck as far as monster movies go with Godzilla X Kong. So will James Wan, now on the James Wan front, we have the last Conjuring movie coming soon and a Conjuring series coming soon. So that's interesting. Those are still very much in play and happening. And we will see how they turn out. I have not liked The Conjuring, any of them. I enjoyed all of them. I think Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson are very good together, regardless of the legitimacy of the story. But yeah, horror movie wise, man, we'll be reviewing as many as we can on Campfire Chronicles. As you know, I direct for the Seattle Mariners. This will be my second year in the chair, fully third year on the team. So that schedule kind of affects Campfire, but we will have plenty for you guys to check out, such as Haunt Graveyard. That's going to be coming back very soon. That's kind of going to be the supplemental show to go if we're not doing a Campfire Chronicles. Haunt Graveyard will be in the place of a Campfire Chronicles episode this year. So we're back in 2021, I believe, still. So that'll be fun to, if you are a fan of our Haunt Season, which I know a lot of you are fans of Haunt Season, because you guys constantly make that time of the year our highest downloaded time. So get ready for that. Also, get ready for Sinister Creature Con coming up this June. We will be in the panel room hosting the entertainment, and that is June 22nd and 23rd. Coming months, we will have the guest announcements, and we will see you all out there if you are a fan of Sinister Creature Con. And the reason I bring that up is because we have a backlog of panels that we hosted to put in as spotlights of our time with some legends in horror. And this guy is a cult classic legend, to be sure. Dick Whalen is the Roy copycat Jason figure from the Friday the 13th Part 5. And we were excited. This was a Hail Mary to get Dick into the convention. He lives in our area and was able to make it after we had a guest get COVID and had a family emergency with COVID and couldn't make it. Dick stepped in, and what resulted was a fun interview, man. And I think that we could have him back at some point in time because he was that fun to talk to. So enjoy Roy from Sinister Creature Con and the Friday the 13th franchise. Take care, everybody.
Okay, I want to welcome you to day two of our Sinister Creature Con panels. Again, apologies for the heat yesterday. Hopefully it's going to be a lot cooler today. Our first guest this afternoon has only appeared in one horror film. But that movie is a part of the Friday the 13th franchise, so that means he's going to have fans for the rest of his life. The character he portrayed is affectionately called the copycat Jason, sometimes not so kindly the fake Jason, and his place in the series is unique and memorable. So let's welcome the man who played Jason with a twist in Friday the 13th, The New Beginning, Dick Whalen.
Hi, Dick. Good day. I'm wearing this boot because I tried to prevent a guy from stealing my car.
Oh, and
this
no.
is what happened.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the truth is, I had too much to drink one night and I fell.
Oh, you had us going there. Well, first of all, Dick,
yes.
I want to thank you so much for being here with us, because I don't know if everybody knows this, but Dick got a call, what, about 9:30 on Friday night?
On Friday night.
And that's
saying help.
And that's about the time that Jimmy, our panel coordinator, was texting me and saying, Jeffrey Combs isn't going to be able to make it. very good reason. Jeffrey's wife was very sick, and so he chose to stay home and spend that time with her. So a very legitimate excuse for canceling out at the last moment. But Dick was so kind at a desperate moment to fill in for Jeffrey that all we can do is just tell you how much that we're grateful and thrilled that you were able to join us.
That's very nice.
Now we're going to spend most of our panel time talking about your experience working on Friday the 13th, Part 5. But first I'd like to know a little bit more about you and your background and your family. Where were you born and what was your...
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Hold the microphone, Dick. Microphone.
I'm sorry. I should know about this stuff. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we moved around a lot because my dad was with the railroad, and every time there was a promotion, you can't run the people that you already know. It's got to be new people. So we kept moving all the time, so I was all over the place.
Okay.
And ended up going to Penn State. And my wife, Carol, is Miss Penn State, actually.
Oh, wow.
The last century. Woo!
Beautiful lady.
The last century.
Yeah. I think somewhere on IMDb, I have a... My mother was Miss Weatherly, Pennsylvania. My wife was Miss Penn State, and I played tennis with Miss Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. So you've been surrounded by beautiful women all your life.
It's true, yeah.
When you were younger, were you interested in more films, or did you?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in the Karloff Lugosi era, and and had a group of friends, and we were all into that. In fact, we would go walking in the church graveyard on Friday nights, and hoping to see some kind of something.
Oh, wow.
But one of my favorite films was 1953, House of Wax.
Oh, yeah.
With Vincent Price.
Right.
And I swore, I was just a kid, I swore when I got home, he was under my bed. But anyway, the odd thing about that film was that it was directed by André de Toth, who has one eye. A 3D film directed by a director with one eye, which is really odd.
He couldn't see in 3D.
He worked for David Lean, too.
Oh, my gosh.
In Lawrence, Arabia. He did the train crash in Lawrence.
Wow.
But he was very good. He was very good.
Yeah. Yesterday, I had another panel where I had two of the local, or actually national, horror hosts. And I had read someplace that you liked to watch Zachary as a youngster. Do you remember the horror host Zachary?
Oh, sure, sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
What was it called? Something with John Zachary.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
Was it Frightmare or
Frightmind or something?
Oh, okay.
But he would,
well, that sounds like it would be right.
They'd play a film, and they would cut to Zachary. Then they come back, and it wasn't even in the film, but they put it in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they just cut to it. He was great fun. Yeah, well, when you're a kid, you're sort of into that stuff. Although when I meet people now that I'm almost 80, okay? And I meet kids, and they I'm wondering, what are they doing watching these films?
Yeah.
I mean, I was never into slasher films. I was into horror films. A whole different thing.
Yeah.
But these kids know all these films, and I think I would not expose my kids to.
Yeah, it was a different era.
Yeah,
sure.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah. But Zachary was one of those hosts that was also, he's like a Hall of Famer. He's one of the original horror hosts and went on for years and years.
He did
and years.
A show that we did once.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I forget where, Cincinnati or something.
Yeah. When did the acting bug first bite you? Because you've been involved in the business for a long time.
When I was at Penn State, I was going to be a teacher. So I was going to be an English teacher, and that's what I was studying. And I had to take a theater course because they figured, well, the English teacher's probably going to get stuck with doing the high school play. So you should know something about theater. So I took the course, and the teacher said, listen, I'm doing acting one next term. Can I ask you to do it? So I thought, okay, I would. And there was Bruce Davison and some other people, and I thought, this is really neat. And I was never very good as a kid expressing myself. And the kind of the theater sort of allowed me to do this. I just found this extra thing that I really liked.
Oh yeah.
I had never thought about it before.
But you had that need for a creative outlet.
Well, yeah, and I'd always been a fan of my childhood fan was Errol Flynn.
Oh, okay.
My adult fan is Carl Sagan, actually. So I was into film. I was into films a lot. And so this gave me and I didn't want to be a stage actor, really. I wanted to go to Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, when I got drafted, I was so lucky. I did not go to Vietnam. I applied for a direct commission, and I got it. But it said small print said infantry. I said, no. Because nobody liked the Vietnam War.
Right.
I mean, even the generals and the high officers hated this. We should not be there. That was the
right,
the thought. So I lucked out and I went to Japan as a medic, and that was terrific.
And that's where you completed your service.
That's where I completed my service, and then we did voiceover show. My wife and I, she was Princess Knight. That's what they called it. And,
wow.
Went on for every Saturday. We were down in Tokyo doing these voiceovers, and so that was fun. So when I got out of the Army, the first thing I did was come to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And bro, let me tell you, it's a struggle.
Well, tell us a little bit.
A struggle.
Tell us a little bit about that struggle leading up to Friday the 13th, because you were in your 40s when you got the role.
I was 41. Yeah.
So what happened in those?
Well, I did a lot of commercials. I did a lot of commercials that are different now because they were all SAG then, Screen Actors Guild. Now they're like, I don't know who these people are, really. And then it says actor portrayal, and we never had that.
Yeah.
If you're doing a cancer product, you've got to have cancer, and that's sort of the thing.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of voiceovers. I did a lot of, and you spend most of your time doing plays trying to be discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing. So I was there for a long time doing those things, barely surviving. I became a photographer as well, because you got to do something else.
Right.
So I did actors' headshots.
Oh, okay.
For a long time. And so then I got a call from my agent saying they wanted me to read for Friday the 13th. Okay. So I went and I read for it, and kind of got a call back. That's when they want to see you again. It starts out with a lot of people, and then the call back is like this many, and then the third call back is like this many. So I went to the third call back. And Danny Steinman, the director, asked me to pretend that my son was lying on the table, and I just discovered that he had just been killed. So we did that, and I ended up getting the part. Now my problem with this is I had to figure out who this Jason guy was. I had no idea. So I went to Brooker's film, and Brooker and I became very tight. Friday the 13th, Part 3. To wear the mask, and I looked at this and I thought, oh my god, how am I going to do this? I don't know. And then they decided, first I was going to do the whole thing, then they decided they wanted to have a stunt man come in and do a lot of stuff. And I was only 41, I was fine. But
yeah.
The very few things I could not have done.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, so that's what happened there. And but whenever you're working, it's fun. You know, really. Unless you're,
I've heard you say that before, there's a joy and
yeah, except that when you're working with somebody who's very difficult, I understand Christian Bale's often, and other people that directors who are just like.
What was your worst experience working in front of the camera then with a director or a fellow actor?
I can't think of it. This was a long time ago. I can't really think of it. I know I had trouble with Danny Steinman because he was never around.
Really?
So yeah, he was always with somebody else doing something else, and I was with this
guy. And he left you on your own.
Yeah, I guess you could say I was second in it. There was nobody to tell me yes or no, so I decided I'm just going to do what I feel like doing and see what happens. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
I did what I felt like doing for a certain scene, and then I waited for somebody to say, no, it was terrible. Let's do it again. And they didn't.
So what you're saying is there was virtually no direction for the role.
Not for me, yeah. No, I think he spent time with the girl. I can't think of her name right now. I don't know why. And she's got bad stuff to say, too.
Oh, really?
About him, yeah. You shouldn't talk evil about the dead, but...
No. Well, this film is a unique film in the Friday the 13th franchise because it takes, it has that twist ending at the end. Were you aware that it was going to be, you said you weren't familiar with Jason, but were you aware that the ending was going to be something unexpected right from the get-go?
I had the script. So I had to sign forms saying that I will not divulge the ending of the film.
So you did know what the ending was?
Oh, sure. But I had to sign forms saying you wouldn't say anything. And I wasn't allowed to talk to anybody on the bus to the location because they didn't know what it was.
Oh, wow.
And so, it's really odd. I mean, it's really odd. But hey, that's your business.
Yeah. I had read someplace that you had to, or you were given the script and the last five pages were missing, or
What is that? You're right. I forgot about that. You're right. They didn't want me to. You're right. I forgot all about that. They did do that. I didn't have the last five pages. Because they didn't want me to know how it ended. You're right. I forgot all about that. So
they did that.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite death scene. Is mine.
Yeah.
The big reveal.
So if they didn't give you those five pages, what did they just wait till the end of the movie? Was it shot in sequence then, and that's the very last scene they shot?
You hardly ever do anything in sequence. You do everything. You have a location. And you're going to use that in the last part of the film, so you shoot that part too. Because you don't want to come back to this location, because the sun's out, it's bright, and hey, it's fine. So you shoot everything you're going to shoot in this particular location. So they did not shoot it in sequence, certainly. And I really didn't. I forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me.
I'm sure.
I did not know how it was going to end. And then when we did do it, when we did shoot it, then they never did give me the five pages, you're right. I had to sign these forms saying I would not divulge to anyone the ending of the film.
Did they just direct you step by step then, or tell you what to do in that particular scene?
Actually, I forget.
Dick, weren't there two endings? Two different, one?
Mm-hmm. Two
a
endings.
Face mask?
Oh, well, we did it. Oh, yeah, well, we did. Before we began, I spent a whole afternoon at in a studio, and they made a call it a mask. It's whatever you do when you repeat somebody, when you're doing somebody and you want to have something look like him. And so I spent a whole afternoon doing that, and I have it at home. It was very expensive. But somebody gave it to me. And
I know you could probably get a lot of money for that. Sell it at some point.
But it's sitting in a box. It's not painted really. I've just got eyebrows and some hair and this. And somebody decided, because I was supposed to roll down a hill. So I was supposed to die. And somebody decided, well, it's already been done. Let's do something else. So we didn't use it.
Hmm.
You know, spent the whole day doing it. So there's your script. That's how great that was.
Talking about the script, then, one thing that stood out when I was reading about your experience on Friday the 13th, Part 5.
Where were you reading it?
I was reading from a lot from the internet, to be honest. Were you upset? How upset were you when you found out that, you know, and you've touched on this, that the stunts and a lot of the scenes were going to involve stuntmen instead of you being
I felt like that. If I hadn't been told initially that I was going to be the whole, do the whole thing, I probably wouldn't have thought much about it. You always have stuntmen. But, I just didn't know. But when I was told I was going to do the whole thing, then I got upset because I'm sitting at home for 10 days waiting for my, you know, for me to come back and do some stuff, and it was just not something I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to do the whole thing.
But you had a really good relationship with Tom Morga, your stunt double. What kind of a person was he, and what was your relationship like on the film?
Well, it was fine. It was just very cordial. Not in the beginning, but we got to like each other.
That's good.
And we did a show together, and fine. He's a good guy.
That's great. So I take it that Danny Steinman is not your favorite director.
No.
In watching a film again, I noticed that there is some foreshadowing in the film where Roy is definitely going to be a part of the final conflict. You just get that impression because some of the reactions that Roy has to some of the events that are happening in the film. Did you pick up on that as you were doing those scenes, like these reaction scenes? Did you realize that this was foreshadowing the final conflict?
I didn't have the final 5 pages.
Yeah.
So I didn't know.
So you didn't?
So I was just doing what I thought was right. And given that my son had been murdered, and I was assuming the role of Jason, who was miles away, hours away, and I was going to act through him, and so pretending to be him and pretending that he was doing it, but I really didn't know. I was very happy about the ending.
Yeah,
so, I was really to sit there getting wet.
Great death
scene. It was very nice. It was very nice, and I forgot the question.
Oh, that's okay. I think you answered it. When we first see Roy, when he's in that first opening scene, he's a paramedic, I believe, who responds to the murder. There's this great reaction scene that you have. Was that basically your audition scene then, when they asked you to look at your dead son?
Well, it was the same, except that it was in a porch, in a studio, and with a table.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, in the 4:3 version, you can actually see my son. But in the 69 version, he's cut out. So.
Oh, really?
But he was there. Yeah, so that's when I decided I've got to do something here that's going to say there's horror to come.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to get revenge for this. What was my feeling?
Yeah. So I think that's the foreshadowing I was talking about. We picked up on that.
Okay.
And the thing that makes that great is that you're doing this just without dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, you're actually communicating that. Mm. And what I really noticed in the film, and if you go back and watch that scene again, and watch Dick's eyes, because that's a lesson in how to use your face with nonverbal communication. Because those eyes are just penetrating. Those
blue
eyes. But no,
Danny liked that scene.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
It was the first scene I did with Danny. He liked it. So they didn't do two takes. They just did one take, and that was it.
Is there anything in your background as far as training or like drama classes or anything that prepares you to do that kind of acting, or is that instinctive? You know, in terms of just being able to convey an idea or a feeling without realizing it.
That's what you learn. That there's ideas behind your words. And what you say, A, is not always the truth. Or what you say is only half of it. And so it does prepare you. And you have to be there a long time. You can't do it after after just a week of classes, you have to like really think, how am I going to do this is up to you.
Yeah.
And then somebody's going to say, no, that's not what we mean. Do it this way. Fine. And you're ready to do that.
Yeah.
Unless you're Christian Bale. I shouldn't say that. No, I just watched American Psycho and I thought, wow, he's great.
Oh, okay. How much of the film was shot on location and where was it then?
Yeah, Camp Crystal Lake was out of town. It was about an hour's drive out of L.A. in the woods.
Hmm.
In the woods, and there was a cabin there, and that's where we did most of it.
Wow, okay. So it actually was in the woods.
Yeah,
so that's good to know. Careful viewers of the film have picked up on the different colored markings of the hockey mask for the real Jason, the one who's in the hallucinations, Tommy's hallucinations, and the copycat. Was that something that was discussed during filming, or were you aware? Did you have to be careful not to take the wrong mask? Or?
No, I just knew that mine was blue.
Okay.
And Brooker's was red.
Okay.
I signed a lot of Brooker's. So it's not the right mask. But they don't discuss that with actors.
Was the mask itself uncomfortable? Was the preparation or anything, or was that
an
easy process?
No, it's a hockey mask, and so hockey players have to deal with it. Yeah, so.
Okay. Friday the 13th is a film that veers off that supernatural angle. It's more of a, I'd call it like a thriller suspense story.
Well, when it first came out, it wasn't very popular. It was not very well received because it didn't have what people were expecting in a Friday the 13th film. But later on, when Kane's films got very sci-fi, very hard to kind of like picture actually happening, you look at this film, it's plausible. This could all really happen. So it became a whodunit. In that respect, the feeling for it just went up and up and up, and now people love it. I'm fascinated by how many people come to me at shows like this telling you how much they loved part five.
Well, that actually has more in common with the first film, I think, because the first film was a thriller, too.
Yes, it was, with Ari.
Now, in the Tommy Jarvis hallucination scenes, and the killing scenes, where it shows only like an arm, with a machete. Or something like that. Was that you, or was that the stunt person, or?
That was Tom.
Okay.
And that's all editing, too. That's all cut.
You've said that you're not a very scary person. So that you're not sure why you got the role. But do you think that maybe that was part of the plan, that maybe you gave the appearance of being this person that was non-threatening, and that people wouldn't automatically say, oh yeah, he's going to be Jason?
Well, I have to give credit to Danny Steinman, which I don't want to do. So I don't know if he had that in mind or not. I just don't know. But that's a good thought. I'm not a scary person, but maybe sometimes I look that way. I mean, you don't know what people see when they look at you.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought I was scary looking.
Well, like I said before, you were able to convey a lot without saying a word, and you have this very pleasant appearance. But when you are looking at your murdered son, you have that look in your face like you could do something about it.
Well, my whole life from there on started there.
Right.
So I had to absorb this whole thing about, oh my God, and I had no children, so.
Yeah. So that was really acting then.
Oh, sure,
the experience. Yeah.
But you try to feel stuff, and what comes out, comes out. Sometimes people don't like it, and then they say, okay, take two. I can't think of his name. 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Stanley Cooper.
Cooper will do 75 takes.
Yeah.
To get one little thing right.
Right.
Different than
right.
A think William Wyler was kind of the same way. But I would love to have worked with Kurt, but I understand he's someone it was very difficult.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that last scene. You said it was your favorite scene.
Yeah.
What kind of staging was involved, and how long did it take to shoot? And was there much rehearsal involved in the final?
No. I was placed on the stakes. And then it started to rain. They had the hose. It started to rain. And they had flashing. And we did it. They only used a piece of it, but we did it for a long time. We didn't do a lot of different takes, but we shot it for a long time.
I'm going to open up the floor for questions now. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask of Dick about his career or Friday the 13th Part 5? Got a question over here.
Hi. Love the movie. I was curious, was there any explanation of why your son was there, why Roy was kind of hiding his son away?
I forget.
I think there was.
I think he did something, and
there was a reason that he had gone into that, had to go into that kind of care. And I'm trying to think of what it was, but I think it was Roy's decision to, I don't know, not have any contact with his son. I don't know whether it was a custodial thing. Jim, do you remember?
I just forget.
Yeah, it may not have been something that was entirely in Roy's control. Any other questions?
Yeah, I don't think he was shot because of something I did.
No, no.
I mean, this wasn't payback for something.
Yeah, not at all.
I'm trying to think about what people, why he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, I think.
Yeah. Really. I have to ask you, what, do we have any other questions? Okay, we have one right here in the front.
I'm just kind of curious for the making of the movie in terms of, I understand a stunt person was doing a lot of the scenes, but for the scenes that you were filming or any reaction shots that you were filming in character, how much of that did you understand or know that you were going to be the character versus not being the character if you were filming scenes with the mask on?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble understanding.
Because you said you didn't have the end of the script, the reveal.
Yeah.
But were you filming anything in costume as Jason?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit, but it's not in the film.
So the hallucination scenes.
I had clothes.
You know? Yeah.
But
I have to ask you if there are no other audience questions. Oh, we do have one. Good. Then I gladly.
Hey, it's nice to meet you. I came to represent for you. This film I saw the most in the theater out of all of them. I live right around the corner from a movie theater, and this was playing double feature with everything.
Yeah.
I had one question that me and my friends always went about. At the very end, when they after we find out that it was you that was killing everyone, they open your wallet. There's a picture of Joey. Why did you have a picture of yourself in your wallet? It was something that through fan boards,
that.
We were always wondering, why is there a picture of himself?
I had nothing to do with that.
But it was just
somebody that the writers thought was.
it was just something dumb like that. I finally get a chance to meet you, and I that was the only question.
Well, it wasn't a picture of me. It was a picture of who?
It was a picture of Joey, and there was a picture of you.
Well, sure, but that's what the whole thing was about for me.
I didn't understand why there was a picture of you in your own wallet, other than your driver's license.
Oh, you said Joey.
Yeah, there was a picture of Joey first, But then they showed a picture of you in
okay.
your wallet.
Well, I think it was the Joey part that was really important.
Okay, so that was just a question
because that was guiding all my movements.
Yeah. One more question to the audience. Who saw this in the theater when it came out? Other than me.
I did. they had a screening in Paramount. And I don't know if you remember Dick Wilson, Please Don't Squeeze the Charms.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Well, I took Dick Wilson's daughter. And she wouldn't talk to me the whole way home. So I don't know.
Well, I'm so glad that you were able to join us. And just, I have to ask this question because it's haunting me. Before I let you go, you played Dracula on stage in Japan.
Yes, with Carol. With
your wife.
I was still in the Army. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just such fun. I got articles written up about it from the Japanese papers and everything. And it was such fun.
Wow.
May I tell a story?
Go ahead.
That?
Sure. Go ahead.
Sure.
We had been newly married at the time. We had been newly married at the time that we did this on stage at Camp Zama, where he was, thank goodness, all on the fields of Vietnam. And he had this plate, a false mouthpiece with the false teeth in it.
Yeah. Which I still have.
Thank goodness it doesn't fit anymore. Because he would surprise me from time to time when we'd go to bed, of course, and he'd surprise me with his teeth and roll over and go, ah! But he does have a sadistic sense of humor.
Well, Dick, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Our
unending gratitude for you to honor us with your presence at the last moment. Be so unselfish as to join us for this weekend. Thank you again.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
All right, man. That was our fun panel with Dick. He, again, was pretty great for coming in last minute and stepping in, and I thought Charlie did a great job with that being a last-minute replacement, but he might as well have just been there from the get because he was that much fun to talk to and interact with. Coming up later this week, we have the tribute show, which I'm talking about the Peanuts celebration, and we will also, like I mentioned, start our WrestleMania series with WrestleMania 1 and 2. So stay tuned for that, and I thank you guys for listening. As always, stay spooky, everybody.
May the stars light your way throughout all your journeys. May the stars light your way throughout all your days. May you see all the world, systems, stars, and planets. May the stars light your way and see you safely home. Did you like that?